I'm Hillary Hendershot, your host, and this is Profit Boss Radio, episode 88. Profit Boss Radio is your weekly wealth mastermind. Profit Boss is also a community and a movement for women who are ready to take control of their money, break the glass ceiling, and give ourselves permission to finally have enough. Want the secrets of wealth to be yours? This is the place. I'm Hillary Hendershot. I'm a certified financial planner running a leading advisory firm for women, and I'm sharing with you real stories from real life and real women who are making it happen. Forget Wall Street. Let's do this, ladies. Ready for a financial reboot in the new year? Feeling like you're unsure of what to do next with your money? Well, I have an exciting event coming up this January that can change everything for you. I'm hosting Profit Boss Live, a one-day in-person event focused on women building wealth. At Profit Boss Live, you'll have the chance to meet other like-minded women and really connect and talk about money in a safe space that's a totally judgment-free zone. Because let's be honest, money talk is usually cold, boring, and uncomfortable. At Profit Boss Live, we'll enjoy a warm, inviting, fun atmosphere where you can connect, share stories, laugh, and even learn together. And yes, there will be a cocktail or two. Find out more at ProfitBossLive.com. Listen, the last thing you need next year is more uncertainty, especially when it comes to your finances. At Profit Boss Live, you will create a customized, detailed, and actionable wealth plan custom fit to your financial goals. You'll know which steps to take to save, spend, and invest wisely so you can stop worrying about money or wasting what you've worked so hard to earn. Come meet me and your new money mastermind in San Jose on Friday, January 19th for this all-day event. Go to ProfitBossLive.com to get registered. That's ProfitBossLive.com. Don't delay, though. Early bird pricing only lasts until December 18th, so buy now to save $100 off the ticket price. That's ProfitBossLive.com. If you've been listening consistently, you know that my friend Erica Mandy, who's a former major network television broadcaster, gone host of the Newsworthy podcast, has been generously contributing some news segments to Profit Boss Radio. The Newsworthy podcast is where you can get your daily news fix and actually enjoy it. And a good number of you decided to subscribe to her email list and got yourselves entered into the contest to win a ticket to Profit Boss Live. So here's Erica with an announcement of that winner.
Hey, it's Erica Mandy from the Newsworthy Podcast. I hope you enjoyed a little financial news the last few weeks, and I just want to say thank you so much to each of you who tried out the Newsworthy, either on thenewsworthy.com or if you search for it on iTunes. I hope it's useful to you to get all the day's news in less than 10 minutes, Monday through Friday, in a fast, fair, and fun way. And a special thanks to those of you who signed up for the Newsworthy's weekday email. All of your names went into the drawing for a free ticket to Hillary's Profit Boss Live workshop. I wish you could all win, but unfortunately, there can only be one winner, and she is Melissa Crawford. Congratulations, Melissa. Hillary and I will be following up in an email with all the details. So thanks again to all of you and to Hillary. Have a great week.
So congratulations, Melissa, and thank you for listening to Profit Boss Radio and The Newsworthy, and I can't wait to see you at Profit Boss Live. I'm pleased to be joined today on Profit Boss Radio by Jean Chatsky. If you haven't heard of Jean, she's the financial editor of NBC's Today Show. She's also an award-winning personal finance journalist. She's AARP's personal finance ambassador and the host of the podcast, Her Money. That's all one word. You can find that on iTunes. She's also a best-selling author. Her newest book, Age Proof, Living Longer Without Running Out of Money or Breaking a Hip, which she wrote with Dr. Michael Roizen. And she'll talk a little bit about that during our conversation. And that's a a New York Times bestseller. And Jean lives with her family in Westchester County, New York. I was excited to have Jean on. We talked a little bit about her perspective on whether things are getting better or worse for women financially. And I think her insight on that is particularly unique and really gave me some new perspective. Also, we talk about ways that parents can help kids get out of college without debt. She's obviously, that means a lot to her, is having is avoiding the sort of financial hamstring of college tuition debt. Parents helping kids do that. And she talks a little bit about how you can do that. It takes some elbow grease, but it is doable. And she also talks about the success mindsets that motivate her to be at the top of her game in the national news media. I hope you enjoy this conversation with Jean Chatzky. Jean Chatzky, welcome to Profit Boss Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you're in New York City today, yes?
I'm in the New York City suburbs today, as you'll figure out if the dog starts to bark.
Okay. And you're prolific. You're on the Today Show. You've got 8 or 9 books out. I think it's 9.
I do.
what's a day in the life of Jean Chatzky like? Are you in the television studios very early during the week?
When I'm on, I am in very early because the show goes early and you got to get there in time to get yourself looking halfway decent before you go on the air.
Yes.
So I get there fairly early and then I get to look like I had professional help for the rest of the day. So it's a nice little bonus.
Do they do some makeup for you?
They do. They do a little hair. They do a little makeup. Sometimes more than a little. It sort of depends how you show up.
Nice. And then how do you find time to write 9 books also?
Well, I mean, I know that sounds like a really big number, but I've been doing this for a really long time. And so if I write a book every couple of years, that's about the cadence.
Okay. So you're kind of always working on something.
I'm always working on something. I like the writing and the reporting. I like to have a new project with a long deadline to work toward.
Mm. Very good. And as a member of the media or even as an author, has some of the financial topics that are top of mind right now are gender-based compensation parity. Has that touched you at all? Are you aware of what your cohorts are being paid?
You know, it's interesting. I've had this discussion with a number of women lately, as you might expect. One of the things that I do is give speeches, and I do think there are some inconsistencies on the speaker circuit that men tend to make more than women, but it is also a one-to-one negotiation almost every time you have a new gig.
Right.
As far as at magazines, I mean, that's where many of my full-time jobs have been. It's been a while, and I mean, frankly, none of us were paid all that well. So I think,
right.
I don't know what my colleagues were making when I was there.
Right. And so with someone as someone who kind of has her finger on the national pulse, do you think that this conversation about pay parity is making things better for women? Is it your impression that women are taking the reins more? Or what do you see happening out there?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the millennials are leading us. They are, and I've seen this on my show as you know, I have a podcast called Her Money, where we talk about women and our lives and our financial issues. And millennials are more willing than any other generation that has come before to really open up about the numbers. And unless you get honest about the numbers, it's really almost impossible to get to that sort of parity because you don't have transparency.
Right.
And so what we're seeing with millennials being willing to tell their friends, their colleagues, what they earn to the dollar in many cases is encouraging those of us in generations that came before to start to do some of the same things. And that's what's going to get us where we need to go. That and the sort of information that is more accessible now in terms of what a job is worth. You know, what does this job pay, and how can I then figure out the right way to ask for that amount?
Mm-hmm. And I think a willingness to almost expect or demand a salary negotiation. That's what I've seen when I've made job offers to millennials. Funny that you mentioned that, is the like foregone conclusion that we're going to negotiate. And I appreciate that.
I do too. And I think what has been surprising is I've seen a couple of pieces of research in the last year or so that says, hey, look, employers, and I'm one like you are, employers expect a negotiation. And so if you don't negotiate, you're only hurting yourself.
Right. Exactly. And then, so earning is one piece, and then saving and investing is another. And one of the things I kind of rail against is there's some data that comes out pretty regularly that says that women are saving money, but that it tends to be in cash. It tends to be in a savings account. And I think that that's really out of fear. What do you think are the main blocks to women building wealth, and how can we encourage women to really have their money in the market and exposed to a little bit of risk in order to earn that reward?
Before I answer the question, can I ask you one? When you say you rail against it, do you rail against it because you don't believe it's true, or do you rail against it because you believe it's bad for women?
Oh, good question. I'm a champion of women investing and earning compound returns. So when I read data that says women leave their money in cash, I feel upset for women. I want to take it on. I want to change that habit.
Well, I'm glad for people like you, and I'm right there with you. And again, I think we're starting to see it shift with the millennials. I had a conversation this morning about a millennial study that came out from Charles Schwab that took a look at the confidence gap, so to speak, whatever we choose to call it. And again, you know, I think when it comes to these younger generations, we are starting to see more participation in investing. I've been talking to a lot of women. My next book is actually about women and about using your money to create the life that you want. And part of that, I totally agree with you, means getting those double digit returns whenever possible from your money. That you know, it has to be there working for you as hard as you're working for yourself, because shoving it in the bank where it's earning less than 1% isn't doing you any favors at all. And so I think what we're starting to see is the byproduct of some really great behavioral finance innovations. So part of the reason that saving and investing is hard is because you're sort of fighting your biology. You're when you ask yourself to save money, you're fighting your basic nature that wants to consume it and indulge in some immediate gratification. So getting beyond that requires having some success in saving. Saving, which is not fun at all, actually becomes fun when you have money saved and you can look at it and say, woohoo, you know, there goes my progress. And it's like seeing those first 5 pounds roll off the scale. They're really, really, really hard. But once you see them, all of a sudden you've got all this oomph and inspiration to do more. And I think the same is true with investing. Until you can capture some investing success, which gives you the fortitude to keep going, it's harder than it should be. So for the past, 10 years maybe, we have been seeing major corporations not just offer 401ks, but automate employees into them and then automatically start to escalate their contributions and automatically put them into default investments like target date funds, where even if they perhaps might have sat in cash if left to their own devices, they're not going to do that because they've been automatically put into a target date fund and inertia is just going to keep them there. Mm-hmm. So what's happening as a result is that this generation, and thanks again in no small part to the fact that we've been in this huge, very long bull market, is seeing some success. And that is, I think, changing the perception among women that we're not only investors, but we're good investors. And so I hope that when the market corrects, because as you know, it will, we stick to our guns. We just let it go. We've got a long time. You know, hopefully we've been rebalancing if we're not in an investment that does it for us. And we have learned these lessons of what it feels like to be a successful investor.
Right. And I was talking with a marketing writer this morning about how to really position that message for women about not suffering the lows, but experiencing the corrections of the market as really part of the whole experience, that you really can't get double-digit returns if you don't accept those single or sometimes double digit losses some years. And so it's really about setting expectations and getting people to have a long term view versus short term view. But I think it does, I think it's very insightful of you to say, point out that it takes a few market cycles to do that.
And I hope that people, you know, we haven't gone through, we did it in 2008, 2009, but it didn't feel at that point as if everybody was walking down a street with the phone in their hand, you know, and I think
what do you mean by that?
I think the emergence of mobile has the potential to be really bad during a market correction.
Oh, because people can just push a button and sell.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, that really, we haven't experienced that yet. And I'm wondering what that's going to look like. I hope that people can just put away the phone.
Very good. Well, I'll do an episode on putting down the phone when the market corrects.
Okay.
So, you know, a lot of the questions that I get from women who are maybe not the millennials, but maybe the X generation, maybe some of the boomers, are really about juggling multiple financial priorities, thinking about saving for the kids' college and retirement. Some people are the sandwich generation, having to pay for children and parents at the same time. What do you say to people who are considering, how do I order my financial priorities?
That there's really a hierarchy, and again, that the numbers should be your guide with a little bit of emotional leeway thrown in. So I think everybody needs to first and foremost have at least a few thousand dollars socked away for emergencies. And that few thousand dollars is really just insurance against credit card debt when something bad happens, and that something bad could be a car mishap. It could be you lose your phone. It could be a medical bill. You need a few thousand dollars in, this is not your, I lose my job money. This is life happens money. So that comes first. And then we start to look at the numbers to point us in the direction of what's the best return on your money. And that varies based upon the interest rates that you're paying on whatever kind of debt you're carrying and the return that you're getting on whatever sort of investments you're making. And it's, you know, every situation is sort of different because some people have a match on their retirement account, which sends the return immediately out of the stratosphere. Some people have high interest rate credit card debt. Some people can refinance their student loan debt down into the, you know, low to middle single digits. So we look at all of those things as what sort of a return am I getting on my money, and use that as our guide. The sort of exception, I think, to this rule is college versus retirement. So I know you've got a baby. I've got two kids. One is still in college and one is out. And I will never be able to tell another parent that you have to put your retirement first at the expense of college all the time. I mean, it is a general rule of thumb that you should put your retirement first. But if you've got kids and you're reading stories about student loan debt and how young adults are not getting a decent start on their adult life because they've got so much debt, it's a really, really difficult thing to get yourself to do. And so in those cases, I would say, you know, grab the matching dollars, try to get yourself on a good trajectory for retirement. And then if you've got kids, you know, try to put some money away for that as well.
And the way you said that, I will never be able to tell a parent makes it seem like you really wrestled with it, that that's the common rule of thumb and you struggled with it and decided to allocate resources to college versus retirement. Is that accurate?
You know, it's a little accurate. I mean, you've got to divide and conquer in that case. And maybe that means that you put away a little bit less for your own retirement, put some money into college, ask aunts and uncles and cousins to help fund the 529 with birthday gifts, and understand that maybe you're going to work an additional year or two to make up that money that you then that you put into the 529.
And so did you end up paying for all of college, or did your eldest, I'm sorry, it's your youngest that's still in college?
Yeah, so I was fortunate enough, my ex-husband and I were fortunate enough to be able to pay for all of college, but our kids have been responsible for their spending money with money that they've earned during the summer vacations.
And I did see you on the Today Show recently with a message about how parents can really plan for and pay for kids' college. I think you had some very specific strategies. Would you share some of those?
Sure. So I'm not exactly sure which segment you were talking about, but part of it is knowing what you're aiming for and what college is likely to cost. Encouraging your kids to not just look at their dream school, but look at a variety of schools at a variety of price points, at least some of which are going to be happy to have them based on their grades and their test scores. There's so much financial aid out there that doesn't get tapped every year in the form of scholarships and grants. And if you can help your kids figure out how to line up, you know, their strengths with a school that really, really wants them, you can help them tap into some of that money, more of that money than if they're going to the same school that everybody else wants to go to. There are other things that you can do too. I mean, you can encourage your kid to go to a community college for the first 2 years of school, making sure that that community college has agreements in place with four-year schools that your child wants to graduate from. That essentially slices the price of college in half.
Right. And that was my route, actually. Now, you mentioned lots of financial aid that doesn't get tapped. Is there a resource to find out about that? Is that a university-specific kind of piece of information?
Some of it is university specific. Some of it is, you know, these are largely private programs that don't necessarily all get given away. But the finaid.org is a really good resource for all things scholarships.
Great.
And talk to the financial aid officers at the schools that your kids are interested in attending. They know so much.
Perfect. And let's talk about your most recent book, Age Proof. What inspired you to write Age Proof? Tell us a little bit about that.
Age Proof, the subtitle of Age Proof is Living Longer Without Running Out of Money or Breaking a Hip. I wrote it with a doctor, a guy named Michael Roizen, who is the chief wellness officer at the Cleveland Clinic. He's a total rock star. He wrote all of the U books with Dr. Oz. And I had started to notice that in every story that I was working on that had to do with retirement, the concept of longevity was coming up. And that simultaneously, when people were running into financial trouble, particularly later in life, there were health reasons attached, that health without stable finances didn't seem to be sustainable anymore, and neither did the reverse, stable finances without good health. And so I had met Mike doing a television pilot that didn't go anywhere, but I picked up the phone and called him and said, what do you think? Do you want to put our heads together and write this book? And he was like, yeah, I'm in. And that's where it came from. It's done well. We were on the New York Times bestseller list and the Wall Street Journal, and continue to go around and talk about it.
Well, congratulations. Dr. Oz wrote the introduction to the book.
He did. We're very grateful for that.
And it says, and the snippet for the book says, the book talks about the connection between health and wealth. So is the core message of the book that we really need to spin both those plates? That, and I say this to people too, as healthcare becomes more and more expensive and sort of bureaucratized in this country, I say, look, it's our responsibility to keep ourselves out of the medical system as much as possible by doing those preventative things. Is that kind of the core message of the book and how to do that?
It is, with one twist, and I love the idea of spinning both plates at the same time. The toolbox that you need to do both of these things is one toolbox. There are actually a lot of strategies that can help you improve both areas of your life.
Oh, really? Like what's your favorite strategy?
Probably automation. I mean, we talked a little bit before, but you know, putting things on automatic pilot so that you don't have to think about them every single day. I mean, thanks to Dr. Roizen, I've done this with breakfast and lunch on most days. I have three or four different breakfasts that I can just reach for. They're easy. They're always here. I know they're pretty healthy, and I can do the same for lunch. And that way I only have to think about dinner, and that makes it easier to go through my day.
That's fantastic. And I talk about financial automation a lot, and just recently started bringing, in fact, I'm sitting in front of my lunch for the day. I bring it from home now and I pre-cook it. I pre-cook on Sundays. And so whenever I am pre-prepping my food, I find it goes smoothly. And then I'll have periods where I fall away from that habit. And I think, what has happened to my diet here?
Yeah, because it's so much easier when you just know exactly what's going to happen. And it doesn't even need to get that boring.
No, it doesn't have to be boring. And I think, kind of on a side note about food, the thing I've really recognized is, like, it's actually kind of hard to get healthy food in restaurants. Now, with certain restaurants, exceptions, of course, but you go out and there's, you know, added fat, oils, salt, things like that. And so it's just a more bulletproof way to manage your health.
Yeah.
Very good. So, you know, I think I look at women like you who have, I mean, truly your role on the Today Show is fairly coveted. You're prolific. You've sort of climbed to one of the higher rungs of the ladder in terms of the national media. And you've done it without a lot of the, I want to say, drama or negativity that some members of the media seem to really rely on. So you've attained an impressive level of success.
Thank you.
What do you think? Yeah, absolutely. You deserve that. What success mindsets do you credit with your achievement? What would you share with other women that they can learn from you?
I think you have to figure out what you're good at. I mean, and for me, the answer to that question came from people on the street who, after I was on the Today Show for a while, started coming up to me and saying things like, I don't do money, but you make it sound like something I can actually manage. And I started to realize that what I was good at was translating complicated things into, relatively simple to follow directions without dumbing them down.
Okay.
And So whenever I have gotten hired for anything, it's been for that reason. It, you know, whether it's a book or a speech or a series of videos or a podcast, that's what it, that's what I'm good at. And the sooner that you figure out what your currency is, the more you'll be able to turn it into not just a job, but a career.
Let me dig just one question deeper, if you don't mind. It takes Sure. something to get up. I've been on television a few times, not like you, but it takes something to get up at 3 a.m. It takes something to sort of fight the fight that you have to do that. So it's for you, it's been more than just figuring out what you're good at. What is your motivation? Like Simon Sinek would say, what's your why? What's behind it for you?
I get a real, well, two things for me. I get a real charge out of the people who say my kid's in college with no loans because of you. I mean, I can't tell you how good that feels.
Yeah.
It just, and it happens, which is amazing.
I got a little choked up on that one.
Yeah. So that is truly substantial. But the other thing that continues to drive me, and I think, I mean, you asked me in the beginning about the books. The books are not a, you know, figure out what you want to say and say them for 3 minutes kind of a thing. The books are significant reporting. I really like reporting. I came out of college wanting to be a journalist. I like the days where I find flow, you know, the concept of flow is where your day goes by so quickly that you forget to eat and go to the bathroom, essentially. Right. So the days where I find that are the days that I spend on the phone talking to brilliant people at universities about their research. I'm curious about all of that. And I continue to be interested in it. And it's why I've been able to do personal finance for 25 years.
Love it. Well, thank you for sharing all of that with us. We'll definitely put a link in the show notes to your newest book on Amazon, but I would love for you to share about your podcast, because I think Thanks. That my listeners really would be interested.
So it's called Her Money, and it's, if your listeners like this conversation, then they'll like the conversations that we have on Her Money. It comes out once a week. You can find it wherever you find podcasts. We have conversations about money and about life for women, about careers, about success, about family, about relationships, about why money makes us so incredibly emotional. And we do it with wonderful, wonderful guests, you know, everyone from Brené Brown to Arianna Huffington to Hoda Kotb to we've been doing it now for about a year and a half, and it's one of my favorite things to do all week.
Beautiful. I agree. Podcasting is a wonderful form of professional self-expression. It's a lot of fun.
Absolutely.
Great. Thanks for joining us today, Jean.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Profit Boss Radio. If you liked it, share it with an artist or creative that you love. And whether you're a painter or a mathematician, may you have all the freedom and prosperity you want.